friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comics Dungeon. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Chris Casso.
Hello.
Cole Hornaday.
Hi there.
And Nicole Am.
Hello.
How is everybody today?
I should probably move the mic closer to my face.
Speaking to the microphone. You know what? It feels like forever since we've all gathered around the table.
It's been a little while.
Happy to have us back.
ECC.
Yeah. Speaking of ECC, how was it? You were there the entire time?
I was there the entire time. Yeah, it was really great. We had a very successful Emerald City Comic Con as far as the store is concerned. Mm-hmm. And there were a couple things that I had taken notes on, like the DC Roadshow, which was for retailers to talk about Rebirth. I went to that on someday, one of those days. And it was interesting. There was, you know, some good things, some bad things, and overall I was hopeful from that.
That's a good sign.
Yeah, actually,
Can you unpack the good things, bad things?
The good thing was that I felt that Dan Didio was a bit humbled by it, in the way that he had that look of fear of losing his job, you know? just that kind of like, hey, guys, this wasn't good, you know? But not 100% like maybe some people would want, but it was enough to me be like, okay, you got some of it. Okay. You're changing tone. They were a little bit more relaxed. There was the streaming thing that they did that was all like, hey, guys, Rebirth. I'm a corporate head talking to you. And it wasn't that. It was just like, so get some cheese and some, you know, crackers and let's sit down and talk about.
And he was literally a talking head because the angle of. The,
oh, well, so no, this that was a the, different thing, too.
Oh, that was a different thing?
That was the first thing.
Because there was the in-store Comic-Con kickoff, which we participated in, where we streamed interviews with different creators. And
is that what you bought the new TV for?
Yeah.
And
we have a monitor in the
nice
corner
monitor,
over there. Yeah.
Okay. And the thing is, though, everything was just broadcast from whatever the creators had at home. So Dan Didio at the office just had a laptop, and it was looking up at you, and it was just sort of like
his whole face. Like there was only a little bit
thing going on.
It's
just like,
yeah.
So it's just like I can't look at Dan Didio's face from this angle for, you know, 20
like
minutes.
This at you, like, Rebirth is gonna be amazing.
Yeah.
You're like, but though the WonderCon, I think, is where they were streaming, and they were very showy, and this one was a lot more relaxed. So that was a good aspect. The bad aspect is it was still very vague. They gave us some things of like, we can't really talk about this, but here's a little something. But they still didn't really give me a full-fledged, like, what is Rebirth?
Right, right.
And so that was still not great, because I left out of it feeling good, but then I was also like, so what am I telling people again?
Right.
You know? And the hopeful thing is that I saw some panels. I heard the excitement from Jim Lee on a lot of different things, and hearing a little bit more of the world of it got me to think like, okay, they're trying.
Yeah.
So whether or not it's going to be successful, whether or not they're going to regain the trust of some long-term fans is still questionable. I'm very much pointing at you,
yes,
Chris.
Yeah. It is worth mentioning that our coworker Leanne went as well, and she was very hopeful about it.
And she was kind of guns blazing, like, what are you going to do with this?
Yeah.
What are trades going to look like? What are their page numbers going to be like?
Now, Leanne still feels joy, unlike me.
She does.
And,
she does.
As when it comes to DC and other things like that. So it's just like, okay, you know. But it is nice to know that they did make her feel excited about it. Cool. So
Did she have anything in particular that she was getting her hands on that she felt excited about?
The Bat Family material.
Okay.
Detective Comics.
Pretty much her jam.
And they are bringing back Batwoman, and she'll be in the Detective Comics series.
Oh, that's my jam, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. I don't know if Leanne cares about Batwoman.
Will she still have her...
She loves her Robins.
Will she still have her sexual political distinction that she had before?
At some point, they had mentioned that Batwoman is going to be outed, or so somebody wrote an article on it. It wasn't in the
We're starting
itself,
over again.
We don't know.
Still starting over again.
That's why we're like vague.
Yeah. It's still so vague. So it doesn't seem like it's like a... So one thing, Batman hasn't been Batman for like 2 months or whatever stupid thing the new 52 did. So that's good. And they have Legacy going on as well, which should be interesting to play out. So, you know, they're breaking some stuff up. They're keeping some things. So
is it possible they don't know, or they can't give you details because they don't know these details yet?
Well,
I always feel that's a thing.
Yeah, well, some of it I feel like it could be that, but some of it I feel like they're keeping it under wraps because Marvel and DC are so scared of stuff getting leaked. That they won't even tell retailers what's going on. Like Marvel does this stupid classified on so many things where it's just like, here's a variant that's like $50 to $100 and we're not going to tell you what it looks like or who it's by.
Sell their product.
It's like, you know, how do you do that?
Sell their product
for free comic.
I'm talking to you guys.
For free comic.
I don't understand this.
I know. Yeah, for free comic book day, it's always Marvel and DC that put full classifieds on their core item, and they're like, we'll tell you after you place orders, and it's just like.
Like,
I got something
not...
cool. You want to buy it? Trust us.
You know, I think I'm going to order 200 copies of SpongeBob instead. This is free comic book day for kids. I don't want to know about your classified Suicide Squad right now unless you tell me more.
So that's the gist of the roadshow for me.
Cool. Speaking of Rebirth, it came out that there was a rumor that each title in Rebirth was going to have a 2-year arc. And then Dan Didio quickly went to Facebook and said, no, that's not actually what's going to happen. He says that, quote, there's a long-term story plan for the DCU, but by no means does it include every storyline from every series. Not only does that sound silly and overwhelming, but would be nearly impossible to manage. It actually sounds like Dan Didio is doing a lot of damage control.
Well, but I see, I read that as somebody took it as a generalization, and he's clarifying that some things are going to be a 2-year thing.
Yeah.
But not everything. Not everything is a tie-in.
And
so, like, the Super Family is a big deal in the Rebirth stuff. That's probably going to play out.
Do we know
over a period of time?
How many titles in Rebirth? Is it just the core, like, what is it, dozen characters? Or
I didn't actually count, but there is a chunk. I mean, there's a whole free previews that shows a whole bunch of them.
It's not too many, because it's like Aquaman, Green Lantern, Superman.
Did that turn the camera?
No.
Okay. I was going to pull that up for the camera.
But you did.
You did tear this open, but that's
fine. Okay.
It's free.
It's free.
It's free.
Here, here. It's all better now.
Ooh,
and it's DC.
It's DNA.
Ooh, charge extra.
Extra.
Yeah. I'm going to go.
Polybag.
Now I want to go murder somebody with that.
But so, yeah, so there's Aquaman titles, Batgirl, Batman, Batman Beyond, Batwoman, Birds of Prey, Blue Beetle, Cyborg, Deathstroke, Flash, Gotham Academy, I'm running out of breath, Green Arrow, Green Lantern, Harley Quinn, John Constantine is coming back.
Again.
In a different way for another time or something.
Is he a new John Constantine for a new world?
Yeah, probably.
For a new perspective?
Yeah.
That's actually
kinder, gentler.
He has frosted tips now.
That's not going to...
That's one of my questions, actually, about Rebirth, is that...
It's not a reboot.
So for the New 52, they came along and they basically redid the multiverse and changed, sometimes for good or bad, characters. Mm. Like
and their histories. And
yeah, and I actually found a video today that I posted on Facebook of about a year and a half ago, Cole Hernaday, the man right there, was talking about the new Superman and that it was, you don't like the new Superman, the new 52 Superman, because he's lost his moral compass. Now, my question is, for the Rebirth, are they taking Superman back to pre-52 Superman? Or are they taking Batman back to pre-52 Batman?
So here's the interesting thing on Superman specifically. It sounds like that the new 52 Superman's going to lose his powers, and that the pre-52 Superman, who survived Convergence with his wife and now baby son, or who's now like 8 or something, will become Superman again, even though he's already Superman.
Yeah.
And there will be a balance, like the new 52 Superman will be Clark Kent all the time, and then pre-52 Superman will be Superman all the time, so that way... The secret identity is a little it's a little convoluted.
You still need a bit of a Bible to read the books.
That's confusing.
Well, maybe they'll give you some confusing context, but then they'll just be like, straight storyline. I don't know. Because there's a lot of supers. Like, it kind of becomes...
So there's a Chinese Superman.
Yeah.
Yes.
And there's a Superwoman coming.
Yep. And there's...
Supergirl's
they're
going
actually
back
doing
to
a
skirt.
Supergirl.
So,
yeah.
Amidst all the kind of confusing falderall, there looks to be some fun, innovative things coming down the pike.
That all new Superman by Gene, what's his name? Gene Luen Yang. He he wrote American Born Chinese, and he's been doing some stuff for DC.
He's been doing Superman or Action Comics or one of those.
But I'm actually looking forward to that. That might be interesting.
So yeah.
Sorry, I cut you off, Ben. What were you saying?
I totally forgot what I was going to say.
Okay.
Comic-Con.
We were doing Comic-Con.
But one last question I have. You said that one, like the pre-50 or the new 52 Superman. One Superman's going to stay Superman, and one Superman's going to stay Clark Kent. Are these two characters going to coexist in the same world?
I guess so. So okay. that way that the alibi is even better. It's kind of like when Jim Rhodes was wearing an Iron Man suit so Tony mm-hmm. Stark could be Tony Stark. Mm-hmm. And then at some point they could trade out. And then Peter Parker's doing that too. Like, he's still Spider-Man, but he hired somebody else to be Spider-Man. So yeah. now he's got like a buddy Spider-Man, so he could be Peter Parker when the other Spider-Man's Spider-Man.
What about Miles Morales?
He's there too. It's like a team of spiders. It's like Batman Incorporated.
It's like... Or Spider Family.
It's Spider Family. Yeah.
Spider Squad.
It's like when Bob's
the Web Warriors.
It's like when
I like all the spider people except for Peter.
Andy Kaufman had this alter ego whose name I can't remember. Do you remember his name? Anyway, so he had this really like bad lounge singer, like really offensive alter ego.
Yeah.
And to irritate people, Andy Kaufman would appear in public and Bob Zmuda would appear as this alter ego. That kind of sounds like what they're doing with the whole like superheroes. Oh no, I was Clark Kent, but no, look, there's Clark Kent over there.
Yeah.
See?
Mm-hmm. That's an old thing that they used to do like in the Silver Age too, but that would be like one issue and you'd be like, haha, we're done with the joke. Now it's like, it's still going.
Yeah.
Well, then that became, but the Andy Kaufman thing became very meta because after he died, that persona, the lounge lizard,
and you're looking it up now?
I am. Is that all right?
Yeah, no, totally. Okay. Because I was going to say, if you know the name of Andy Kaufman's alter ego, please email us at perfectbombpodcast @gmail.com.
In fact, there was, oh gosh darn it.
We'll keep
anyway, look that up.
Well, some more of the wrap up?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Just a couple things. Won't take as long as Rebirth, though. But so we got a lot of families. Like, I was on the kids' side of our, we have a big island. Half of it is back issues and quarter bin material, and then the other part is like toys and all age stuff. What is it?
Tony Clifton.
Tony Clifton. Yeah. There you go.
Okay. Thanks for clearing that up, Cole.
Always the last one at the party. Keep going.
And
there
I
was
found
a party?
You're
you got
in
an
it.
Invite. You got an invite.
Yeah. I noticed that there were a lot of people who were looking for all age material for their kids or some kid that they knew randomly. I don't know. So that was an interesting thing, because in previous years, maybe I've had people ask questions, but people seemed more engaged in buying material, trying new material, gifting material, and especially for all age and kids. So I thought that was really cool. It got to shine there.
How does it compare to previous years?
Previous years, I mean, people were more toy happy. Like, I seriously don't know what happens on the other half of the island, because it, you know, you're just constantly... Yeah. Dealing with the barrage. So, you know, previous years, people were a little bit more timid, I think, in purchasing and stuff like that and engaging. Like, they saw one thing they wanted, they would get it and they would go. Sometimes there'd be a little friendly banter, but not too much. This one seemed a lot more like people were coming for the first time to be like, what about comics? And what about this? And what about that? They were really out to explore this year.
Cool.
Which was different. Yeah.
Cool.
Good.
And then, as usual, there were some scandalous cosplayers.
Oh, of course there were.
One that I saw was a Wonder Woman whose whole booty was hanging out. And I questioned, since she hadn't turned around, if she was actually wearing underwear. Because if she was, I know what kind. But otherwise, it was just like... And she, you know, we
what
make...
kind?
I believe there is a color called nude in terms of underwear.
That would be extremely nude, like invisible panties, I think, at that point. But a lot of times when you're scandalous...
The jet technology is spreading out.
Yes, invisible panties, invisible
so
jet. You sit long enough, stuff turns invisible. So a lot of times when you see those people, you'll see them later and they'll be wearing a trench coat or something. Yeah. They'll be covered up because
this is Seattle and it's cold. If you want to go outside for a smoke, you got to put a jacket on.
It's a family event, you know?
Yeah.
And so, and especially somebody like iconic, like Wonder Woman, it's not your time to do stripper Wonder Woman.
Right.
So I just thought that was really more funny than anything, but also just like, really, girl? Really? Like, this is, you go out to the bars later around there and you do your cosplay there if you want to be all scandalous and stuff. But it was just kind of funny. There's always somebody. There's always someone who's mostly nude. They have like pasties on or something. And you're like, why? Like, I understand we have sexualized characters and all that, but you pick and choose which one you do. There are girls with full body suits. You know, like, there's a lot to choose from.
When SakuraCon was here a couple of weeks ago, I was actually walking past the convention center because I was on my way to a thing at the stadium downtown. And there was the cosplayers milling about, and I passed a couple on the street. And it seems like some of these outfits are not legal. You know,
oh yeah, some of
society.
Them defy gravity too. There's actually a site that you can buy fake boobies so that you can portray the anime characters properly, because some of them have very They're very endowed.
Huge,
and then they
land.
also have like strange little like contraptions like with fabric that defy gravity that you would like tape onto it.
We have the technology.
Yeah, seriously. It is very sci-fi in that how can you do that?
Booming industry.
It may be unwise to even ask this question, but what do you feel those particular cosplayers seek to accomplish? In that type of,
you know, maybe they're
presentation.
Exhibitionists, or sure. or maybe they're they do like attention, or maybe they didn't realize their booties were hanging out.
Oh, they definitely realized, because you can't feel the breeze back there.
Yeah,
I think one of the things. So Cole and I come from the theater world, where dressing up isn't actually all that big of a deal anymore, because we wear costumes when we're on stage, and that's why like Halloween's not that big of a deal.
No, it's really not.
And so for these people, this is like their once Absolutely. Or twice a year opportunity to really go for it and get dressed up.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's so much of an exhibitionist thing. Like they don't, you know, the girl who wants to show her booty. Maybe that's part of it, but.
If you're Wonder Woman, her skirt don't go like that. So you're doing it on purpose, and that's where I wonder.
So this is an opportunity that folks who are seeking some form of creative self-expression don't have, but other than this type of venue.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's like Halloween, you know,
I get that.
Good sewing skills, too.
Actually, she just ran out of fabric. That's what happened. And she
oopsie.
Cosplay.
I've worked on this body. Might as well just show it, you know.
So.
I just don't think it's the venue for that. I don't care how you cosplay and how you express yourself that way. I think you just need to know what you're dressing for.
Right.
And then do what's appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm never going to shun anybody for wearing like Vampirella or something. If you can rock a Vampirella costume and nothing moves,
More
somehow you've worked all the tape.
Yeah.
Do it, girl.
But wander through all those crowds of hundreds of thousands of people. And
also,
and
it gets
kind of
chilly. Like, I don't know. It doesn't sound good to me, but that's not my self-expression.
Right.
So, you know.
Any final words on Comic Sungeon's presence at Emerald City Comic Con?
Treated this really well, and we also had a sale here during that week just to try and fight against the potential lack of customers, so we did really well here too. So it was all in all a really great week.
We had a terrific time while you were gone, by the way.
I know.
You weren't supposed to tell her we did that.
I know, I didn't
come on out anyway.
Hear
everybody has, it's public information now. Yeah.
I saw pictures.
We had.
And they were adorable.
We had boys' night in with podcasting.
That sounds great.
Okay.
Stumblebound.
So, moving on from Emerald City Comic Con. Rumor came out that they had to do reshoots for Suicide Squad, and this rumor came out after Deadpool got really favorable reviews and a lot of box office moxie, and people started to think that Suicide Squad was trying to add more humor, more like Deadpool-type humor into the movie, and David Ayer's coming out and saying that, no, it's actually more for action, so, you know, it sounds like they screwed up the action more than they did the comedy. But I saw one of the trailers.
And the action looked fine.
Yeah, the action looked fine. Harley Quinn is like every scene Harley Quinn is in, she's got a stupid one-liner. So I'm like, if that's the action reshoot you did, I don't think you did it very well.
See, the way that I read the previous report on that was that trailer we saw with the Bohemian Rhapsody theme, that was all the funny in the entire movie. And that the reason they decided to go and put more funny in was because
that wasn't all that funny.
Yeah, well, and also because Superman Batman was so somber and so dark and so like dark grim dark that they were like, we just took a 70% dip in the money the second week of Superman v Batman versus the people, and. we should maybe actually try to not feel like we want the consumers to commit suicide, despite our title. So that still sounds more likely to me that they wanted to be like,
Well, I'm assuming they've already done test screenings and things weren't working. So
yeah.
Blockbuster tentpole movie, they're going to go back.
Yeah,
and
this isn't an unusual thing.
No,
right.
It's not.
It was only unusual because it felt like a knee-jerk reaction to another property.
Got it.
To Deadpool being so successful. And so that's when you got to be like, do your own thing. Don't try to be Deadpool.
Right.
I'm on your side, Suicide Squad. I want you to be a good movie.
But at the same time, that movie I think could benefit from, you know, that from having more humor.
Yeah.
I mean, it seemed like it was kind of silly in the trailer a little bit. Like, it had those lighter tones. So if you then went into a movie and it was super serious for the other, you know, 1 hour and 50 minutes, you know, then you would be like, what? So
yeah, that's, I mean, again, that's a whole different topic of how movie trailers betray the movie.
Right.
Like when Lawnmower Man came out, which was this sort of like a adaptation of a Stephen King short story, and the trailer made it seem like it's all this like virtual reality, trippy, you know, kind of thing. And then that was a very small part of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like all the virtual reality scenes, granted, this was like in the late 80s, all the virtual reality scenes you see in the trailer are in the movie. And so you feel kind of cheated. Speaking of feeling cheated, I saw Batman v Superman this last week. Chris saw it too. Cole and Nicole haven't seen it yet, so we're not going to go too deeply into it. We're not going
to
give any
spoilers. I would love to hear what you guys have to say, and I would love to practice something I don't do very often, which is to be quiet and listen. So I would love to hear what you guys' experience was like in seeing the film.
Okay, so Chris and I come to it from a completely different context because Chris knows like the comic, right? Mm-hmm. Batman, you know all the Batmans and Supermans. I haven't read one Superman comic book in my entire
life.
Just
say yes. Yeah,
all of them,
yeah,
yes.
You know
so,
all of them, yeah.
But you have a frame of reference,
yes,
right?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
My frame of reference is the Batman cinematic universe. You know, I'm quite fond of the Tim Burton movies. Mm-hmm. I really like the Christopher Nolan Batmans. I actually haven't even seen the last, like, the George Clooney Batman.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm unfamiliar with the comic or with the cartoon. Right, I haven't seen the cartoon, so I'm only coming to it from like a cinematic perspective.
Okay,
right. Mm-hmm. I actually watched Man of Steel for the first time to prepare to watch BVS colon DOJ, and how I like to call it.
I did like Chris's little, you know, end bit about versus the people.
Yeah, 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 the people versus Superman.
Batman versus Superman versus the people.
So Man of Steel. A Facebook friend of mine said that he thinks it's the best Superman movie. He thinks it's, but I think he was just being contrarian. I felt it was too much destruction porn. I think they saw Avengers and said, "Oh, they destroyed New York and the Avengers. We can destroy Man of Steel and we can destroy Metropolis and Man of Steel." So once I got over that, and once I got over Superman's blatant disregard for human life, you know, it was fine. Whatever.
It's actually kind of an okay sci-fi movie.
It's not
a Superman movie.
It's not a Superman movie.
Yeah,
we'll give you that. But I did suffer through it, so I at least knew about Henry Cavill's Superman in Batman v Superman.
The things you do for this podcast.
The things I do for the podcast. I sat in a quiet theater watching the final Fantastic Four movie.
How many people came in?
Yeah,
the
I didn't do
to
that.
Watch the movie with you.
Oh, so it actually. So I wrote on Facebook that I was there by myself, and I was there by myself like the first. I got there like 15 minutes early, about, you know, 10 minutes to curtain. One other lone dude walks in, and sits in front of me, and I'm like, "All right, brother, we're sharing something." But then, like, you know, and this is like in one of the worst downtown Seattle movie theaters. I'm not going to say which one, but a buddy of mine asked me which one I went to go see it in, and I told him which one, and he's like, "Ick." And I'm like, "Yeah, well, no other theater was playing it within a 5-minute walk of my apartment."
Oh,
so,
there you go.
Mm-hmm. But when it was all told, there's probably about 25 to 30 of us in this movie theater.
Yeah, so
it was
people roll in during the previews.
And there's like 20 minutes of preview, so you can actually go have dinner at the curtain time.
Seriously,
and still make the movie. So I went in with really low expectations.
Same
I went
here.
I went in thinking this movie has a worse Rotten Tomatoes rating than Tommy Wiseau's The Room, which is a notoriously bad movie.
It boggles me.
And people. But what I think happened was this: people were giving it bad reviews on Rotten Tomatoes before the movie even came out.
Oh.
Because the last I looked, when I was looking up the movie on IMDb to get the showtimes, it was up to like 73%. Whereas when it came out that it's got a worse rating than The Room, it was like at 19%, you know?
However, is it a percentage thing? I mean, how many people have seen Batman versus Superman versus how many people have actually seen The Room?
And The Room came out a while
Good
ago
question.
Now.
Yeah.
You know? And then the other thing, too, is are we talking specifically just the critic percentage or the fan percentage as well?
Yeah, because those are two different. Right.
Yeah, they are. And I
cannot believe that as many people have seen The Room as have seen Batman versus Superman.
And I would think that you would get
on a global
stuff
scale.
Before the movie came out because maybe some people got advanced screenings to be able to critique it, right?
So. Yeah. So that all that being said, and that was a lot that I just said,
okay,
I ended up kind of liken the movie. I will tell you this. It's not the best movie ever. I didn't care for Jesse Eisenberg's Lex Luthor. I enjoyed it. When it's no secret Wonder Woman's in the movie. When Wonder Woman came on screen, I'm like, yeah! Right on, Wonder Woman. But because I have no, like, I don't have the context of, like, this is how Batman should be. This is how Superman should be. And I'm like, yeah, okay, it's a decent movie. It's a, you know, Ben Affleck as a middle-aged Batman. He kind of works for me. We're going to see a lot more of him, too.
Batfleck was one of the least problematic. Him as a superhero was one of the least problematic things for me in the movie. He wasn't Batman. He was the Punisher. But whatever.
Yeah.
It wasn't the worst movie I've ever seen. But,
like your mantra for this movie. It wasn't the worst.
But
really
I was very disappointed. You know, yeah. It needed to go to its room and think about what it did. And
had to do that. Had to say that when I was getting a mouthful of water.
You're welcome. And, yeah. No, it's just, and also it was badly edited. It was like, mm-hmm. It's also missing like 2 hours. And so that tells you that it was also badly edited.
I'm sure they had to keep it under a certain time because there's that thing with movies where they want their blockbusters to have as many screenings a day as possible because they want to make as much money as possible.
Mm. Right.
And so when you, 2.5 hours is like the limit. Right. So they probably did cut about an hour out of the film.
My one of my biggest problems with it overall is that it is actually 5 or 6 different movies. And I'm not saying it's 5 or 6 different plots. It's actually a bunch of other movies that it cannibalized. It's Mad Max. It's elements of Arrow. It's elements of Daredevil. It's elements of Lord of the Rings, because Doomsday was an Uruk-hai. He was hatched from a little egg like the Uruk-hai, and I was expecting the Eye of Saruman to make a guest appearance. And it was just all these other things. Like the moment there's a dream sequence, prophetic dream sequences, because that's what Batman does, and it's like a post-apocalyptic Mad Max world.
Yeah,
and the music even changed into what I recognize as Mad Max music because I have a bunch of that on my iPod. And it's just like the term that I like to use is cargo cult, which is if there's like a group of people who have never been exposed to anything in society and they see like an airport, they think it's really cool. They're going to make their own airport, but they don't actually know what a plane is. Mm-hmm. So like this movie was just like, you know what trended well? Let's see here. Lord of the Rings and Mad Max. And people really like to look at Arrow's abs. So let's have a montage scene with Batfleck showing his bat abs, even though he's going to wear armor to fight Superman. So we really don't need to spend 4 minutes showing how he's getting muscly. And it just kept on going on. I'm just like, there's so many movies in here that doesn't have to be. Like, Lex Luthor, to me, was them being like, hey, you know what really worked for Daredevil? Mental illness for the villain. Let's do that, you know? And it just was unoriginal. And yeah. it was Death of Superman with Dark Knight Returns, mm-hmm. with Flashpoint, with something else.
Now, you're referencing comic books.
Comic books right now, yeah. So it's actually like 2 or 3 different comic books that have no right to be in the same room to each other because they're just so different creatures. Mm-hmm. So it mushed them all together. And, I mean, that happens a lot. And sometimes it works okay with some of like the Marvel movies. It didn't work so well with... I'm kind of blacking out here. Sorry. I went on a tangent there. There's a couple other movies that they're just... Oh, the third X-Men movie, the Phoenix one. Mm-hmm. That was like the Dark Phoenix saga, but they took a bunch of Joss Whedon's X-Men stories, and they're like, nah.
Right.
You know, so sometimes I just feel like there's a bunch of just apes in the room shoving things together trying to make these stories work, and it just doesn't.
So it's collage art.
Yeah.
Not a pastiche, but a collage art.
Yeah. So we may talk about it more when these two come around to seeing it. Or maybe
and screaming.
Maybe you won't
Shall
even
we
see
go
it.
We go together?
And we won't
Probably
talk
should.
About it.
Yeah.
Support group. All right.
Well, can we hold hands?
Yes, we
Excellent.
Definitely can.
But
right.
you know,
do that.
Yep.
So, I mean, you make good points but I just walked out of the movie going,
we need the support.
Anyway, let's move on to book report, everybody.
I hope he uses that cut.
All right, let's move on to book report, and let's start with you, Nicole. What do you want to talk about this week?
I read Gwenpool, the Unbelievable Gwenpool #1. It's got stuff on it. Okay. It's
is it Cole's DNA? Because that's going around.
Hey.
Hey, man.
I tried to fix the cover the only way I knew how, which was spit.
It's an improvement.
Oh. You're like, oh, I guess we're doing a thing. Why can't I find the thing? It's by Hastings. Is it Chris Hastings? Christopher Hastings is writing it. And do you know how to say that person's name?
I can't see. Guruhiro. Guruhiro.
Guruhiro.
It's like a short term.
Is the main story artist and Dan Leo Bayreuth. Why did they make this so hard for me? Mm-hmm. Is the prologue artist. So what it is Gwenpool came out of the Howard the Duck series, and she's a real girl named what's her name?
Gwen.
It's Gwenpool, but with an E. P O O L E. And she thinks
that's terrible.
It's very meta. So she thinks that she's in a comic book, which she is, but she isn't really. She's in, yeah. So she thinks like it's not real. So in the prologue, you see her going into a bank and being like, I'm going to be a hero and I'm going to gun all these people down. And oh, look, explosions. And everyone's like, oh, my God, what is happening? And she's just like, no, it's fine. It totally saved the day. Like, why is everyone freaking out? I saved you. You're fine. I'm the good guy. You know, so she's got this idea that she's this good person and she's in this, you know, fake world. They even reference the Truman Show at one point in it because there's this guy who becomes her sidekick who was working for the bank robbers in the prologue. Uh-huh. Which, by the way, there were bank robbers in the prologue.
Spoilers.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. I'm unclear. Is this a one shot?
I thought it was an ongoing thing. Yeah.
Ongoing?
Yeah. So this is just it. Just gives you some context of her a little bit, and she's slapsticky like Deadpool, and she's got that kind of humor. And this first one is just, you know, it's just going into a story of her trying to take on a really difficult case from this one woman who works with a lot of superheroes and like gives them, you know, there's this one thing happening over here if you want to go take care of that. And she's like, oh, I could totally do this because she's got overwhelming confidence because none of this is real. Right. I can totally do this. And she just by luck ends up actually saving the day. And then some guys show up that I don't want to spoil for you that are really awesome. So, I mean, generally it's just her thinking she's in a fake world doing crazy, ridiculous things and thinking like, it's fine. And that's pretty much Gwenpool. Yeah.
I think Christopher Hastings is the writer of The Adventures of Dr. McNinja.
Oh, right. Yes.
Which is a great title in itself.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I would definitely recommend this if you're looking for that kind of campy, silly, very meta sort of stuff. I think if you like Deadpool, you'd probably like Gwenpool. And I also think you don't have to like Deadpool to like Gwenpool because she's different.
Cool. It's for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
All righty. Gwenpool, number one. Thanks. By people whose names we cannot pronounce.
Except for Christopher Hastings, because I'm white and live in America.
Cole Hornaday. Mm. What about you, sir?
Well, I think I will share my experience of reading The Trade of Bitch Planet, written by Kelly Sue DeConnick and who's the illustrator? Delandro? Valentine Delandro. This was a long time coming for me to get around to reading this. I've not been a big DeConnick fan, probably because I've just missed out on what was her writing and what was special about her. So I did enjoy this, but I would consider this a well-constructed pastiche. A lot of people were saying, well, it's Orange is the New Black in space or, you know, something like that. What this book is to me is an interesting reworking of Margaret Atwood's The Handmaid's Tale with The Longest Yard, which is a football prison movie.
Starring Burt Reynolds.
excuse me, the original starred Burt Reynolds and the remake had...
I didn't see the remake. I wouldn't be surprised if it was Ben Affleck.
No, it wasn't Ben Affleck.
James Vanderbeek?
No, it was...
That comedian?
It was the comedian.
Oh, yeah, Adam Sandler.
Adam Sandler, yes. The artwork, the layouts in the artwork are tight and enjoyable. It's just that it's she has found her audience. She has found a supportive audience of female readers, and I think that's what's important. But for a male reader, I'm expecting a male reader who credits himself as being a progressive thinker. I need something that's going to challenge me more than the pastiche of ideas I've already come across before.
Okay.
So I will keep reading the book. I will keep pursuing. I will keep doggedly pursuing the story. But right now, it's not doing anything new for me. However, there are some characters I find really intriguing and really enjoyable. But I'm not getting the promise that I'm going to learn something new from this book.
Fair enough. Bitch Planet.
Bitch Planet.
All right, thanks, Cole. Mm-hmm. Chris Casso, what about you?
I have been catching up on The Legend of Wonder Woman, which is a digital first comic, so you can buy the chapters first online. And then they kind of catch up and they merge like three or four chapters into a printed version. And it's basically starting, it's like Wonder Woman year 1, 2, 3, and 4. It's basically starting her at, you know, from her birth on and her being raised on the island of the Amazons. And it's very, very charming. It's the writer is...
So is it revisiting the sentiment of the original?
Yeah. So it's not part of New 52.
1930s.
Yeah, and it's actually taking place like kind of during World War II era. Uh-huh. And story is Renee DeLis, and actually she's also doing the art as well. And it's a very, very well put together book visually. It's very engaging for me. Ooh. And it's very character orientated. They really develop her mother. They develop like a conspiracy that's taking place on the island. And then she's met Steve Trevor at this point, and she's trying to get him back to the world of men. And she's lost here in America, and she's kind of learning things. And she just met the old Golden Age Wonder Woman sidekick, Candy Etta. And or Etta Candy.
Etta Candy.
She's fantastic. She's like this no sass, just college girl who takes Diana in and is going to teach her the way of man's world. And yeah, every issue has been really enjoyable so far.
But Etta's not devoted to always eating something, I'm hoping.
No, they're not focusing on that at all.
Well, tell me, is there a lot of spanky spanky stuff in this?
Not
what?
Not at all.
No, he's referring to the bondage that it came from.
Yeah, there was a lot of bondage in the original.
Yeah, that's,
remember when I was reviewing the original one like last year?
And Cole was like, what?
It was kind of a shock to me, and Chris was like, yeah.
If you want that, that's the Grant Morrison Wonder Woman Earth 1 that just came out. Yeah, it's out, yeah.
And sold out.
But I should have more coming this Wednesday, so we could get you one. Yeah, we'll get you one. This is more of an old...
Because of the spanky spanky.
This is more of an old-ages read.
And
yes.
Sorry, Chris.
That's
sorry.
Okay.
In this totally episode, hashtag,
hashtag yes.
Spanky Spanky.
Spanky Spanky.
All right. Sorry. Well, thank you, Chris. That's Book Report. That's our show. Coming up is quiz time. But before we go, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound podcast is brought to you by The Panel Jumper. See everything Nicole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com. You can also watch episode 4, new release, An Odd Duck. And also, stay tuned. May 27th is The Panel Jumper Live. We're going to talk about that more in depth in another episode. Because I know you want to.
I really want to.
All right. We'll bring that up. We'll tune in next week and to get details on The Panel Jumper Live coming up. But West of Lennon, May 27th. It's also, Perfect Bound Podcast is also brought to you by The Comics Dungeon here at 319 Northeast 45th Street. Pro tip to everybody, don't be a jerk and break the window.
We don't like that.
Don't do that.
Don't do that.
No.
Yeah.
All right. Is there like a special Comics Dungeon curse that can be placed upon those unwise enough to break?
This worked that well because I've had failures with that.
We've tried.
I've tried. Every day I've tried.
So anyway, so you can come to see them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsdungeon.com. Subscribe to us using any RSS reader or iTunes of your choice. And stick with us. I used to have like a patter down for the end, but since I've switched quiz time and the whole credit sequence, I get kind of confused. Let's move on to quiz time, everybody. I do.
Quiz time.
This time the questions are brought to you by me.
Yay.
So this one is all about Superman. specifically all about the Superman movies, and these are multiple choice. So here we go. Number one, we all know Marlon Brando was a bit of an eccentric in his later years. In 1978 Superman, Brando as Jor-El did what? A, refused to memorize his lines, instead placing them around the set where he could read them, including putting his lines on the diaper of baby Kal-El, reading them off of the diaper as he lowers Kal-El into the escape pod. B, hated doing multiple takes, so he insisted director Richard Donner roll camera on rehearsal as well because, quote, we might get lucky. Or C, sued the producers for a larger part of the profits, even though he is in the movie for less than 10 minutes.
All of the above.
All of the above is correct, sir.
Wow.
That man was such an incredible piece of work.
Yeah. All right. Number two. In his autobiography, Richard Pryor took the role of Gus Gorman in 1983's Superman III, even though he thought the script was terrible because A, his son idolized Superman and Pryor wanted to be a part of the franchise. B, he was offered $5 million. Or C, his good friend Gene Wilder urged him to take the role.
I would guess A.
You would be wrong.
Was it Gene Wilder?
No.
Oh.
Is it all of the above?
No. Richard Pryor was offered $5 million, which I guess for 83 was
Follow
a lot for him.
Money. That's a lot.
Follow the money.
All right, number three. In 1987, Superman IV, The Quest for Peace. Mm. Oh, sorry. 1987 Superman IV, The Quest for Peace is overwhelmingly considered the worst of the Christopher Reeve era Superman films.
Yep.
But it is the only film to contain what signature scene? A, Clark Kent changes into Superman in a phone booth. B, someone says, it's a bird, it's a plane, it's Superman. Or C, Superman jumps over a building.
I'm going to say it's B. B, it's a bird, it's a plane, it's Superman.
Nope. It's the only of the Clark Kent movies to have Superman changing in a phone booth.
Wow.
All right.
That's
number four.
Silly because they did the bit in the first film where he takes a glance at the half angle and he kind of rolls his eyes at it. So why go back? Oh, that's just silly.
Because it was the fourth movie.
That movie has a lot of trouble behind
it. Problems.
Number four, Brandon Routh, who plays Superman in 2006's Superman Returns, shares what connection with Christopher Reeve aside from their chiseled good looks? All right. A, they were both born in Des Moines, Iowa. B, they were only 26 when their first Superman movies were released. In the case of Routh, it was his only Superman movie. Or C, they both subsequently had a brief affair with the actress playing Lois Lane during production.
B?
It is B. They were both 26. And I look at Christopher Reeve in the first Superman movie, and I'm like, 26? The guy was 26?
Yeah,
man,
he was.
All right. And finally, number five, before Ben Affleck took over the role of Batman in 2016's Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice, Affleck sought out advice on playing the Dark Knight from former Batman Christian Bale. What was Bale's advice? A.
Oh, God.
A. Don't sign on for more than one picture in case it sucks. B, no one can see your face during the fight scenes, have a pro do them, meaning have stuntmen do them. Or C, make sure you can piss in that suit.
Oh, gee. They're all so
C.
good.
It is B.
Yes.
Bale wanted Affleck to make sure he can use the bathroom while he was playing The Dark Knight. All right, well, that's our show. Thank you for listening, and tune in next week at PerfectBoundPodcast.com.